Hey, what is up, everybody? This is Chad the Mark with We Don't Know Sports, and we have a phenomenal guest this week on the podcast, the one and only man of intrigue, Steve Wright. You might even say he's like the Dos Equis man, the most interesting man in the world, whether it was playing in the NFL or going on Survivor, maybe even trying to invent some things or maybe help the world be a little bit better place. Steve has got all the stories and then some. We got as much packed into one interview as we could. We're probably going to have to bring him on again some other time, but make sure you check out the description of the podcast for all the links for Steve's stuff, including the book. We're so happy to hear about that. That should be a great read to help explain all these stories. But for the next, 45 minutes, listen to Steve tell his story. We hope you enjoyed as much as we did. This is the We Don't Know Sports podcast. Stay tuned.
Hey, do you guys know there's somebody sitting up in the corner behind you? I haven't seen him move.
His name is Biggie, and he's just kind of a lurker, but he does move every now and then.
There he is. He is a lurker.
He just wants to be an eavesdropper because sometimes three's a crowd. So, we do what we got to do.
Froze.
Yeah.
So I missed all that.
I was getting ready to say that once every show, no matter what, it will freeze for about 10 seconds. Looks like okay. We already got yours out of the way. I don't know why it does it. It's something with the internet here.
Hopefully, it happens with me too.
It is what it is. But we should be good. Like I said, the recording space, we'll go about a half hour. If it feels good and you want to keep going, we might kill it and then come back. We just like to have fun, man.
Sounds good. Hey, and then, sorry there was some issues with trying to get things over to you on the form.
Not a big deal. It never
showed up, did it? But it's got a lot of
no, it didn't. But I got to go in and see, make sure I got all the settings on that right. Because I did actually see some other ones come in today, but I can fill it out. It's not a big deal.
I get an excuse. I'm going to be 65 April 8th. So I kind of missed that window of being proficient with the, the computer.
You got those offensive lineman hands too. That can't be easy to type.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's
like, I think we're the last generation that dabbled in both.
Like I know.
The old school and the technology.
Yeah, see, we're like early 40s, so we have a little bit of the analog age, yeah. A little bit of the digital age. So we can still appreciate yesteryear and also kind of understand technology. Like, I can open a PDF, so I'm okay.
What is a PDF?
I don't really know what it stands for, but I know how to – damn it, why'd you put me on the spot like that?
That is a good question. I have no idea what it is either.
It's pretty darn fancy is what it is.
Oh, there you go. You guys were in West Virginia?
Yeah, West by God, Virginia, just outside of Charleston a little bit.
My son went to Morgantown.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, we go to Morgantown for all our, Mountaineer stuff we like to go do. And it wasn't a good year for basketball.
West Virginia, yeah.
Yeah, the Flying WV, always got to rep that.
Sure.
But we'll just keep rolling, man. We got Steve Wright joining us. And Steve is, I don't know, you remember those Dos Equis commercials where it was like the most interesting man in the world? Like, I feel like Steve could attest to that a little bit. Not only did he play in the NFL a long time, but for a brief moment, he was the man from Northern Iowa. And then this guy named Kurt Warner came along and probably overshadows that. Does that give you sour grapes at all?
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, how about bagging groceries to MVP is like, wow, so cool. I've never met him. What? I just got a call, an email this morning. I'm going to go back from the head football coach there. I'm going to go back to homecoming. I've been back there, I don't think, since I graduated. Going back there to be an honorary captain and speak to the football team. Super jacked about that. And it's also, too, I'm pumping this thing every place I can.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the book for sure, but I'm going to say Northern Iowa needs to do a better job getting their alumni together. Like, they should be like a picture of you blocking for Kurt Warner even now. Oh, let's just make that happen. Like, let's recruit Northern Iowa.
What's really cool is just writing this book, I'm having people come out of the woodwork, and I'm finding people either on LinkedIn or Facebook or Instagram or something. Just got back in touch with a guy named Kelly Ellis, who was our running back, and we were playing Western Illinois, and he ran for 386 yards.
That's a lot.
Besides his punt returning and kick returning. And then he held that for about 7 years. And I just talked to him just the other day, LaDainian Thomas, I guess. Tomlinson?
Tomlinson. Yeah.
Tomlinson. Yeah, I guess he beat it about 7 years later. But that was pretty cool. Little Northern Iowa had a dude run for 386 yards.
You know, even if that's not like the record anymore, that's still a pretty cool brag. Just to be like, that's, you know, okay, one time I ran for almost 400 yards in college. Just saying, one game, not the year.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's what I'd feel. So does it bother you that offensive linemen don't get stats the same way? Like, you know, I mean, it's just really more about the eye test than anything else. Cause you played tackle, correct?
Yeah. No, it's just to get in there and bloody your nose up and have some fun pushing people around with your four other buddies, you know, have Marcus come by and take someone's rib cage out while I'm locked up on them. And it's just, it's the camaraderie and getting paid well, you know, but no, it's, never had the, you know, the focus on us and never really missed it, you know, as long as we scored.
I mean, it's bittersweet because you have the unsung heroes of the game, essentially, because if you have a good line on either side, you're going to control the tempo.
Oh, absolutely.
Control the game, control the trenches.
And check out how the pay scale has gone now. You know, Henry just signed for $16 million for 2 years. What's his name? The big running back?
Derrick Henry. You're talking about for Baltimore.
Derrick yeah. Henry. And the linemen are getting huge bucks.
I just saw this guard for the Eagles got paid, like got a really big contract. And then they showed like his first big purchase. He just went out and bought a riding mower. That was it.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah. That was offensive linemen are getting love now.
Yeah. It shows how the game has changed. You've got to have the best quarterback. And then you've got to have the best guys protecting them.
So with all flattery, you look like you're in really good shape, and you don't look like you're carrying a lot of weight. How much did you weigh at your? Oh, look at the gun show, baby! Oh, easy. I'm wearing long sleeves, so you can't see mine.
you're out here in Malibu, man. That's just my wife and I just. You know, we just it's all controlled by the pie hole.
That's it. You're not wrong.
Just eat pretty well. I don't really drink. It's not that I had a problem. I just, you know, kind of got away. Anything that goes in my pie hole has got to have some nutritional value.
That is the hardest discipline. That's the hardest discipline in this country anyway.
Yeah, but it becomes like anything else. What, 30 days or something? It becomes a habit. I also, too, this is going to knock you over. I stop eating at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Start at 6 o'clock and through eating at 2 or 3.
So how long do you fast after eating? When do you finally eat?
Well, from you know, 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon until like 6 o'clock the next morning.
That's
and that's usually just a coffee, and then we get in the pool or get out in the ocean and do something, swim or get in the sand and run. I work out with about 5 other guys 3 days a week in the guy's garage. He's got everything, and it's, you know, we're just yucking it up, but man, we push each other. There's an app called Tabata, and it just keeps you moving. So you can set it for 30 seconds, 15 seconds rest, whatever, on for an hour or whatever it is. We just go with that and put on some reggae and get jamming, man.
A little Buffalo Soldier. You know, something like it. I tell you what, you make Malibu sound just horrible. Like, it sounds like the worst place on the planet. No one ever wants to go. No, I'm just kidding.
It definitely has its pluses and minuses. It's the whole city is like 27 miles long, and it's only maybe 3 or 5 miles wide, and it's all on Coast Highway. You never see anybody on bicycle. I've never walked out of my place to go anywhere. I've never gotten out of my bicycle to go anywhere. You get in your car, you know, it's California is, you know, just a car culture, but also too, I mean, you get killed if you're out there on something like, we've had 53 people killed in, you know, car accidents and everything on Coast Highway. It's just a wicked road.
So people flying through there, is that what it is?
I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, you just drive over your buddies, you do your thing, you drive home, you drive, get groceries, you drive back. I miss getting on a bike and throwing a backpack and throwing some stuff in there or walking or, but I'm not complaining. We live right on a surf point here, and I'm a stand-up paddle surfer. So is my wife.
I know my buddy Greg here has a lot of visions of going to Fiji one day, and you have paddle surfed in Fiji, correct?
Yeah, yeah. There's a great surfer who's got a surf camp there, Dave Kalama. He's actually the one that came up with, I guess, and kind of brought stand-up paddle surfing to the to the crowds. And he puts a camp on down in Fiji in an island called Namotu. And it's all around the island are just different breaks. And so if the swell's coming from one way, you'll go over there. If it's hitting the next day on something else. And I did my first free diving there this year. Got down to 50 feet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's warm. It's tropical. The water's, bizarrely clean and clear. And yeah, it's a little bit of heaven. That's my wife and I, down in that area, down in the South Pacific and Fiji and all that is, that's where I could see us, going many more times before I drop.
Heck yeah, man. So it's not like one of those places that you'll see influencers or social media personalities, and then you get there and you're like, it's actually as advertised.
Yeah, it's probably maybe 2 football fields long and a football field wide. And there's, I think, like 12 huts on it. And you sleep in just kind of a okay, shitty hut. But the whole thing is, you never hang around there. They feed you like a beast. I mean, it's just endless fish, different kinds of fish. So you literally live on a lot of protein and vegetables and fruit and everything. And then, man, you're just out surfing all the time.
How long is that flight to get there?
Yeah, it's a long one. You take Fiji Air. It's like 13 hours. Straight shot. It's easy. It's worth it. When you get out, when the door opens up and you smell this warm tropical air just blast you. It's like,
yeah, we're in paradise.
You give a little shaka.
Yeah, we're giving you the moniker most interesting man in the world. So I want to go through some of the stuff that, we've discovered about you, and definitely want to get to the book because that's huge. But, obviously the football career is what got you kind of moving, and you were undrafted, much like Kurt Warner. I'm trying to put respect on your name. We're putting you on the same level here.
Okay. Yeah.
And what was that process like? You didn't get drafted. How'd you get into the league and kind of take us through like the career a little bit?
Yeah, so my senior year in college, I was getting letters from the Cowboys and the Browns and a few other teams. And when it came around to it, I sprained my ankle the last couple of games my senior year. So I really kind of shot myself in the foot. I was playing tight end. And so watched the draft come and go with all my buddies. Got pretty schnockered just watching that. And went home, and there's 3 guys on my patio just sitting there shooting the shit. And I walk up, and they're all from different teams.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, please let one of them be from the Cowboys. And sure enough, it was a scout from the Cowboys. And I said, I'm going with you. He said, get in my car. try to freshen up a little bit. I got this all in my book, the whole story. So I'll try to speed through it a little bit faster. But signed with the Cowboys, got to Dallas. For the first training camp, and there was 120 free agents they signed. And long story short, 3 of us made it.
Oh, wow. That's got to be intimidating to walk up on that.
Yeah, it is, but I really try to describe it in my book that I don't know where this came from me, and this is what my message is going to be to the Northern Iowa, the Panthers, when I go back to speak to them, is stay in the moment. One thing that I was rooming with 5 other guys at training camp. My rookie, there were 6 rookies, all free agents sitting in a room sleeping. And these guys were always talking about like the 49ers scrimmage in 2 weeks and how, they really got to shine and everything else. And or that, we're going against the Rams, next weekend. And I was just like, wow, 120 guys over the course of 3 weeks. There was all the names next to the scale every day we'd weigh, and every day there was more black lines through names. And I knew that I was not going to see the light of day tomorrow, that I was going to have the guy come in and say, Steve, get your playbook and go see Coach Landry. But it didn't happen to me. It kept happening to everybody else. And all I could think about was just, and I didn't really realize until I really started writing this book that what kept me in in the mix is all I was going to do was be the best I could the next morning, because I knew we're doing a lot of run blocking in the morning. So my whole mind was on run blocking. It wasn't in the afternoon when we're doing pass blocking and everything else and doing different sleds, you know, the seven-man sled or whatever it was. So I just focused all on that, knowing that I'd probably get cut by lunchtime and, you know, not make it back. So it was, I think it was just staying in the moment and giving it the best you can. And that's what I'm going to tell these guys, you know, when I go to see them too, is, man, just focus everything on this homecoming game. Don't focus on the homecoming party afterwards. But when you get to that party afterwards, be 100% there and focused on that and have a freaking amazing time. But when you're here, bring it all right here. Just connect and you know, do the just stay present is my one of my bigger messages.
I think that's apt, not just for football, but for many things. But yeah. How long was that process between the time you got there versus I'm not familiar with how it was back in the
Then it was about 6 weeks. And then I got picked as one of the team members and just had that same year where I knew I wasn't going to make it. I was sleeping in this room with defensive backs and everything else. But that year, their number one and their number three draft picks were offensive linemen. Howard Richards, who went on to have a great career. And the third round draft pick was Glenn Titansor. And so we were the three linemen making the Cowboys in 81. So it was, I got a lot of great stories. We were blocking for Dorsett my rookie year.
99 yard run. Right?
There might be a particular play that stands out. I don't know.
Yeah. And so it took me a long time. It hit me way later, just realizing this, that I was on the kickoff return team. We fumbled the ball. I'm coming off the field. I'm on the kickoff return team. I'm running off the field. My offensive line coach pushes me back out and tells me to take the spot. He didn't tell the number one and number three draft pick, both offensive guards, and they both guard and tackle just like me. I was like, wow, they shoved another free, you know, just this cheap free agent back out there again. And so I was definitely getting under their skin, and I knew I was a scrapper and could play. So that really made me proud. But yeah, then getting in there and blocking for Tony Dorsett. And the cool thing about that is 4 years earlier, I'm sitting in the stands before the Metrodome was built. It was freezing. I grew up going to those Vikings games and watching the Purple People Eaters when I was, you know, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th grade. So 4 years earlier, I'm whatever, 16, I'm probably 17 years old, junior in high school, watching Drew Pearson catch the Hail Mary.
Yeah, the first Hail Mary.
He caught the Hail Mary, and now 4 years later, I'm in the freaking huddle with him, and we're slapping five, and I'm the youngest guy in the huddle, and my parents are, which I thought were the worst seats, right behind the goalpost, about three rows up, and we huddled up in the back of the end zone for this play. You know, and I was shitting on myself that, holy crap, they called the play right over me in the center. And I was like, holy crap, what are you doing? You know, but they just wanted to get a few yards.
You're just trying to get breathing room, and then look what happens.
Yeah.
I would have came off the side, off to the sideline, been like, see, coaches, what happens when you keep me in?
I think I was throwing up. I was just like, whoa, what happened?
So you ended up, playing for more than just the Cowboys. So do you have did the Cowboys remain like that team you held in high prestige because you wanted to go there? But
they did through the Colt years, because I went from the best to, you know, one of the worst, playing for Frank Cush, who was just an absolute dickhead. absolute dickhead. It was just I got a lot of stories about him in the book. But had a lot of great guys. We sucked as a team, but we were really tight. Chris Hinton, who I'm still in touch with today, and guy Ben Utt, and quite a few other players. We were a really tight team, but we sucked. It was all the coaching. But
I mean, clearly.
But then once I got up to the Raiders, yeah. So then, you know, I jumped leagues. I went to the USFL because the Colts were the lowest paying team in the NFL, and so I went to the USFL and we played in. Played 1 year we were in the championship game and lost that, and the league folded. And our head coach, Charlie Sumner, had been the defensive coordinator for the Raiders for the previous 10 years. So they said, you know, once a Raider, always a Raider. It brought him back as the defensive coordinator, and he brought myself and I think Anthony Carter back and ended up just sticking around and scrapping through it. And yeah, so, you know, I'm not disappointing myself in doing it, but that was the strike year.
Oh.
So they're walking the picket line with everybody and everybody's disappearing. So I go over to my parents in Arizona after about 25 days of walking the picket line, and, you know, all the star guys had disappeared. And I'm going like, fuck, I don't need this either. You know, this thing will settle out, and toss my stick with my, you know, strike. Went over to my parents' house, and that night I was having dinner, and the Raiders called and said, hey, Al Davis wants you back here tomorrow morning. He's going to jack you up 25%. He's going to guarantee this. Boom, boom, boom. And I said, okay, great. That's awesome. But I'm not tonight. I'm not going to negotiate anything tonight. I'm having dinner with my parents. Hung up. 2 minutes later, he calls back. Oh, Steve, he's really pissed. He's going to jack it up to this, and he's going to guarantee that. And I said, beautiful. Al Locasal. And I said, Al, thank you very much, but I will talk to you tomorrow. And hung up. He called again, and he said, hey, Steve, this is it. He's guaranteeing 100% of the contract. He's jacking it up to this, but you got to be at practice in the morning. And I said, fuck, I'll be there.
So you weren't even really negotiating. You were just like, we'll talk tomorrow. But he was reading it like, I'll raise the stakes until it was, that was amazing.
It was the most crazy negotiations. I really was not negotiating. He thought I was the toughest negotiator.
That's great. That's amazing.
So I ended up getting over to the Raiders and I'm pulling into the lot, and Mike Haynes and some other guys are back out in the picket line because Ken was getting close to everything was getting ready to break in the league. And they're kind of looking at me like, you know, you scab. And so I just said, you know, by this time, when you get traded, you know, as my rookie year, well, you realize you're a piece of meat. You're just a number. So then, you know, the Colts, I'm starting for them. They're not going to pay me. And it's like, okay, you got to just look out for yourself. So after 30 days of sitting on the strike or whatever it was, I came through in the morning. And then that afternoon, before this afternoon practice, the whole league went on off strike. They everybody came through. So I could have not dealt with that and come back like everybody else did. But I sat at home for one night and negotiated a monster, great contract that, you know, better than I should have ever had. So I was just, it was just another lucky thing for me. And my book is full of so many of those kind of stories.
Did you ever think about becoming an agent after that skill? I mean, that was amazing.
They move over, Scott Boras.
Yeah.
No, it was just dumb luck, man. It was, cause I was all ready to talk to him and I was kind of fired up, but I was like, man, you could talk to me over the last 28 days. They're standing up in the window. Al Davis just standing there like this, just looking at us. And I'm going like, I'm new to guy on the team. And I'm standing out there, you know, fuck you, pay us.
And he did.
He did.
Yeah. So I gotta ask, just because you played in the USFL, and I don't remember it that well because I was so young. Sure. How different was the NFL versus the USFL back in the day, like when you went from one to the other?
Yeah, it was really kind of a trip because when I was with the Cowboys, one of the first guys I ever played against was Jack Youngblood. You know, okay. And I had two holding calls my rookie year against the Rams and him for, you know, just hanging on for my dear life. And I played against some all pro guys quite a bit. Nothing like later in my career in the 90s or something, when every weekend there's a Pro Bowler, a future Hall of Famer. And you're just like, oh. So when I got to the USFL, I had Reggie White there. Reggie White, and there was some good players, but you know, you have, you know, two tough matches a year. You know, everybody else was, you know, fairly soft.
Gotcha.
Just not as good quality of players, and especially week in and week out, like you do when you get to the NFL. And I go from Neil Smith to Bruce Smith to, you know, Reggie to Lawrence Taylor to, you know, it's just like, wow. You're ready.
That just sounds painful.
You're ready for vacation at Fiji.
Yeah. do you have like a murderer's row of like the worst ones to line up? Like if you have like one or two,
let's pick four.
Yeah. Mount Rushmore of the worst, maybe not the best player, but the ones you just hated lining up against.
Neil Smith, number one. Cause I had him, whatever.
I think 14. Neil Smith is criminally underrated. He was a phenomenal defensive player.
Awesome. He was awesome. And we just didn't like each other and he was good. And Bruce Smith is better than him by far.
Oh yeah,
Bruce was, and not that Neil was, you know, didn't have the smarts he did, but Bruce just knew how to set things up, and it's like Reggie knew how to set things up. Reggie, and then you know, then against Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah, that's a hell of a Mount Rushmore for me. I got
thrown over on the left side for that game. You know, here's a funny story. So I'm playing right tackle, and the left tackle went down. I went practice or something. So I got moved over for my first time really playing left tackle. And we were playing in the Meadowlands. And I knew, I'd watched so much film on him, knew he was fast and strong and everything else. But, you know, it takes that first collision to really understand each other. And the Raiders always do a 10 step drop, 12 step drop. And, you know, this is the first play of the game. Burline's back there, you know, 13 yards or something like that. And I'm wrestling with, I got Lawrence Taylor. He's running up field and then he just turned on me and stuck his head right in the middle of my chest. And there's no way I could have ran backwards farther. I was just, I was a bug on his windshield. And the only thing that slowed me down was running over Burline with the ball. And I'm laying on the ground. Burline's underneath me. I'm in the middle, and Lawrence is on top of him. Right, you're in for a long fucking day.
Oh,
it's just like the first play, the game had been, I'd been going for about 12 seconds, and I was already, but I ended up, so I finally realized, you know, his strength and his speed and everything else. I ended up having a great game.
I mean, you got to acclimate quick in that situation.
You sure do. It's, and that's what Mike Ditka told me. It's like my rookie year. I called him Wisdom Walks when I was a rookie. For some reason, he was my special teams coach, and he'd just throw his arm up around my neck when, you know, in training camp. And so I felt pretty good about that, but I was so frustrated, you know, with maybe just, you know, the offensive line coach screaming at me or something. And he'd just throw out a little simple something like, hey, he's driving you crazy because he's yelling at you. And I said, yeah. He goes, you start to worry if he stops yelling. Whoa. You know, he cares, you know. And then, you know, getting my ass, because so, I mean, you're going to get your ass kicked today. Deal with it. Figure it out fast. You're only as good as your last play. So you better get it figured out or you're going to be gone. So it's exactly like you're saying. It's you got to figure it out fast.
Yeah, so I said earlier, you look like you're in tremendous shape. But as far as playing all those years, do you have anything like wearing you out, nagging injuries, or did you pretty much make it out pretty good?
Yeah, I tore my left shoulder in Kansas City in '90 and had the whole thing repaired. But it's just, that's been a long time. It's been whatever 35 years or something. I'm going to get this thing redone in November, but I just had my first real big operation. I got a new knee 11 weeks ago, new knee with metal parts and everything else. It's trippy.
They can rebuild you. I'll tell you what, how much, you still got time for us. Can we take a quick break and come back?
Take it and come back. Well, wait a minute.
All right. Oh,
there's my new knee.
I can't see it. It's got the back. Oh, wait a minute. There it is. Yeah, that is a bionic knee for sure.
Nice.
Isn't that something?
That's I'm sure the shoulder surgery probably wasn't as refined as this time.
This next one will be, I hope.
But yeah, we're going to take a bathroom break. I want to definitely talk about the book. We haven't even touched on Survivor yet because I'm not really a fan of the show, so I got questions. And then we'll kind of wrap it up from there. So we'll be back in a few. I'll text you in a minute. There he is.
Hey.
Hey, I gotta ask you.
So sorry about that.
No, you're good. Are you a baseball fan at all? It is opening day after all.
No.
Nah.
All right,
Greg is gonna be upset. You can see he's wearing his Braves gear. He's already done with you.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. I just it was football all the time. It was football, and then I don't even watch any football anymore. The game has just changed. It's just, you know, now there's, how about that new kickoff?
I'm okay with it only because it's gotten to the point with the way it's been where everything's a touchback, you know, so at least give me something.
Better than it was, but, you know, God, I hate to sound like an old guy, but man, not, you know, back when I was, you know.
Get off my lawn.
Just pounding on each other. Wow. So like, I never got into baseball.
They've had more rules, you know, to protect the quarterback in recent times, and I feel like there's more quarterback injuries than ever before, despite the new rules. So it's like you can't make it make sense.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't watch. Like this last year, I watched 3 games. I watched both the championship game and the Super Bowl, and that was it. And all 3 of those were amazing.
Yeah, I mean, their product is at an all-time high. It's super exciting for almost every fan. They do such a good job with parody. Like we're talking about baseball being open today. There are teams today in Major League Baseball that know they have no shot at the playoffs. But in the NFL, like anything can happen. And like you're talking about the injuries, like you can have that
look
stuff
at the Texans this year.
Yeah, like the Houston Texans, like they, I know you don't follow, but like nobody thought they'd make the playoffs. I mean, they were expected to win like 4 games. Yeah. But it's great about the parity, but I think what it is just my opinion. I look at these defenders now, they're faster, bigger, stronger than they've ever been. And when you're getting hit by people like that, there's consequences. And when you look at all the rule changes they've done to try to make it easier on the offenses, you know, they're still like, if you're scoring 25 points a game, that's on the upper half, you know? So, I mean, it's the defense is just, they're so athletic now.
I agree. I mean, everybody is just their how they work out is so much better than what I was exposed to. I was just talking to a buddy about it. You know, it's just all the newfangled cool things for like alignment, just pushing and driving different things. I had my girlfriend sitting in the front seat of my car with it in neutral, pushing around a parking lot.
Yeah, but that builds character. Yeah.
Yes. But I would have loved to have had the tools that these guys have now.
Yeah, they're training like the Rocky montage.
Yeah, man. Rocky IV, you're over in Russia.
I would have loved it. I would have loved it.
I don't know. Just don't be one of those. You're not a CrossFit guy, are you?
I'm not.
Okay, no. Good.
Right, no, I would have been probably if I was 30 years old, but right now I get into soft sand and I run a straight, slow line.
that's nothing wrong with that. Your joints probably appreciate that more than CrossFit.
Yeah. My joints love it.
So let's talk about this book, because I'm always curious when people go to write a book, like what gets you started? What makes you think, like, hey, I'm going to write a book and I think people are going to read this. Now, I can tell you from talking to you for a half hour already, I want to read it. But like what gave you the confidence to do it?
It's a good point. A lot of great questions in there. I didn't really care how much people wanted to read it. I knew I wasn't going to have a number one bestseller or anything, but it was going to be better than I hadn't been keeping a journal or a diary, but I had so many stories in my head. I thought, why not just start scribbling some of them down and kind of go in a somewhat of a linear, you know, starting with, gosh, I got funny stories when I was, you know, first playing Pop Warner football with the Wildcats in 4th grade and all my buddies. And then we all did this. And then we also raised a bunch of hell and got in a bunch of trouble. So those are kind of fun stories too. And all my buddies, nobody else has written about them. So
wait, real quick. So what type of trouble does a youngin get in from where? And where did you grow up? Were you in Minnesota?
In Minneapolis.
Okay. So what type of trouble are you getting into? And I also have another Minneapolis question after your answer.
Yeah, just a bunch of us would sleep out in the fort. We're in what, 7th, 8th grade, something like that. Sleeping out in the fort, and we'd go out and run all night. It was right on the off this country club that my parents belonged to. And we would go out there and lock the sprinklers in place and go and lock them on the green and slide across the green all night. And then go up and every once in a while, take the break into the caddy shack and the golf cart shack and take some of these golf carts out And most on the golf course show, it's just stupid stuff. Not thinking beyond the end of your nose. And much more. But
can you imagine me and the groundskeeper and you come out and these damn kids are like doing slick and slide down the green and golf carts everywhere on the green?
It's fun. I got some fun stories now. So then just kind of went on to other stories of things that kind of made me who I am, how I learned about things, how, you know, as you're a kid, no one really thinks you're paying attention, but you just really realize that, you know, I was paying attention, you know, just how we belong to this country club. And I write about, you know, just the prejudice of watching, you know, white golfer friends of my parents treat some black guy or Hispanic guy crummy, you know, at the shack or something, and then come up and just be all nice to them. And I just like, that doesn't make sense. It's kind of weird. But you're learning about what I call good mentors and bad mentors.
Oh, yeah.
Good mentors that helped me and a lot of bad mentors helped me too. Like, I don't want to be like that dude, you know? And just kind of onto football and what got me there, my staying present. So it was just more or less to kind of share about how I did it. When opportunities open up, charge. If you're a young person, charge to them. It might not work, but if it even feels good in your gut, the way I think it, you know, we've spent a million years making that work for us, fight or flight. And if there's an opportunity, charge at it. Don't get this involved with like, well, so a lot of stories of like when I was asked to, if I wanted to try out for Survivor, I had never seen the show. I didn't know anything about it. I ran to the casting director. They asked me if I wanted to try out. I could have said, well, let me call you tomorrow. I'm down at Fox.
That worked before. That worked really well once before.
Yeah. And it's like, I would never get back in touch with them. I said, sure. And 2 months later, I'm landing in Nicaragua for, you know, on national TV and Survivor. And it was just, so my thing is just always saying yes. And I wanted to get that out to people. If it sounds good, do it. You know, if you live this life once and you don't know how long it's going to be. And if you got an opportunity, charge.
You set the table for a few things there. But the first thing is the advice you're giving young people. Like, I think that's incredible, right? Because for a couple reasons. One, when you're younger, you have a little more resiliency. Like, you can take some risk. I'm not saying go be dangerous, but you're right. If you see that opportunity, that little sliver, like, yeah, by all means, like, run through that opportunity if you can. And you don't want to live a life of regret, right? Like, you don't want to be down the road thinking, man, I should have done this or I should have done that. That's not going to lead to a lot of self-satisfaction. So I really do appreciate that message.
I mean, that's how I started my business, my mist cooling business, that I was the first one on the NFL sidelines.
Is it the same thing that we see today? Like, has it just spiraled out of that? So come up with this idea?
It's a great story. So I'm over about 2 months before training camp started in like 1990 or 91, and Palm Springs, and the mist is blowing above the restaurant and all the patrons, keeping everybody cool. And after about three margaritas, I'm going, that looks awesome, man. You know, we should have that on our sidelines. So I talked to the guy. I came back and asked Art Schell if I could try doing this. Twice he said, get out of here. You know, don't let the door hit you in the ass. And then finally, because I just believed in it so much, I hit him again. He said, all right, go ahead and set this thing up. But if it pisses anybody off, we're going to tear it down. I said, shit, I'll tear it down with you. The game started. There wasn't a breath of air, 80 degrees. It was the biggest hit of the game. Of our sidelines just being blown around with hot mist, with cool mist. And so it ended up kind of parlaying on that to horse parks, horse tracks, keeping horses cool, keeping the air clean, keeping the flies out of their stables. And it just went on. I got the 96 Summer Olympics for that, cooled that off. And
so maybe we should have led with all the entrepreneurial stuff instead of football. That's amazing. But I got to ask, because the time when this took place, I feel like there's still a mentality, kind of like, you know how when you have a cold weather game, like some players wear like short sleeves and they want to make sure you know that this doesn't bother me. Was there any blowback about that? Because it's like, no, we don't want to look soft. We can handle the heat, blah, 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 you know.
No, everybody loved it because it was 80 degrees. It was, you know, there wasn't a breath of air stirring, and everybody was kind of just huddled around these fans trying to get cool before they went back out. There wasn't one person that disliked it. All the coaches were just dying. It was just a smash.
So do you have like the patent on the first model that like you made, or how did that roll out?
Yeah, because they've been, that the whole system has been cooling chickens off since the 20s. Guys would just poke holes in the hoses and just doing, and so there was no patentable way to do this. And so my thing, and along with my partner who I brought on, is just blow and go. Don't try to just get it out to as many different industries as you can. Be the leader in the smelting plant industry. Be the leader in the plastic extruder plant. You know, we got them on aircraft carriers. They came looking to us like, you know, hey, do you have something that can be portable and we can put up on the decks? And, you know, they're out in the Indian Ocean. It's 110 degrees and they got this fan blowing around, and got them on NASA. And then I landed in the Summer Olympics in Atlanta, and it was the hottest Olympics ever. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, it's just part of my luck.
So I imagine once you get on TV like that, that's got to help your brand awareness a little bit.
It does. But the ways that I got on the Olympics, if you got a second, it's the greatest story in my book.
Let's go.
So about 1989, getting ready for the next game, and a shoe salesman came in schlepping a new kind of shoe that it was brand new. Nobody had ever seen this before. I had Converse contract, Adidas, and, you know, Puma and everything else, but I had a Converse contract, and this kid's going, hey, you know, this is, so everybody's, no one's really giving them the time of day. I said, give me the shoe. What is this thing? And it was no different than the Converse that I had. It was the exact same thing. You know, it's cleats, rubber, and everything else. So I said, give them to me. I'll try them. He went back to his office, and he got a football shoe on one of the Los Angeles Raiders in an NFL game. And he was like, just like the king in his company, his brand new little startup. So I retire 2 or 3 years later, and then 3 years later, go to the Olympics to try to get the contract to go to the Olympics. I'm going against Raytheon and GE and a lot of other big companies. We do our little dog and pony show, come home, and I get this call. And this guy says, hey, I'm going to give you guys the Olympics because I believe in you. And I went, wait a minute, what? And long story short, he goes, you don't remember me. He goes, my name is Mike Ariano.
What?
I'm a shoe salesman in your locker room, and everybody treated me like shit except for you. You were the only one. You made me a hero in my company, and now it's your turn. And it was just like, wow. So he gave us the Olympics because I was cool to him 7 years earlier.
That's pretty badass right there.
Yeah, it's kind of some of the theme in my book, man. Treat everybody alike without looking for something, and the shit just comes back to you.
Yeah, that is amazing. Like, what's the odds of that? Like, just that door opening up from that all those years before, that's quite phenomenal.
Crazy.
Oh, all right. So Survivor. Well, before I ask you about Survivor, Minneapolis question I wanted to ask. Is this a derogatory term they use there to talk about people? Is cake eater a thing they say up there?
Cake eater, no.
Okay. Someone told me that before, and it sounded made up, so that's why I wanted to ask somebody.
Cake eater in Minneapolis?
Yeah, there's something like affluent people they call cake eaters.
Oh, really? I don't know.
Look, don't take my word for it. I was asking because someone told me that, and I
was curious what a Minnesota cake eater was, huh?
I should have Googled it first, but I thought I'd just ask you. That's all right. So let's go to Survivor and talk a little bit about that experience, because I don't know that much about the show. Like, how long were you there? And, you know, just what was the environment like? Like, once the camera stopped rolling, was everybody just like sitting at the Four Seasons? I don't know. How did this roll?
No, it's 100% real. It's shockingly real. You starve. They don't give you anything. You don't even get a piece of gum. Everything you see on TV is real. If you see someone that's a dick, they're a dick because they've been filming you nonstop 24/7 for a month. So it's real. You starve. You lay around a lot. It's rough. I lost 33 pounds in 31 days. That's, when the show ended, I went back. I flew back to Los Angeles. I was going to go see my parents in Arizona. And my front tooth was, it was sore. So I went and saw my dentist. He took an x-ray and he came back and just almost white, just saying, there's more bacteria in there than I've ever seen anywhere. Oh, wow. We're going to pull your front tooth right now. And he goes, this kills people in third world countries. Because you just, the way I always described it, this is your toilet paper. This is your toothbrush. You just don't have anything. You have a pair of shorts and that's it.
I bet that's a hell of a waiver you got to sign before you go on that show.
It's exactly right. And that's why I can't really say a whole lot what's going on. I mean, the thing is like this, and it's actually, I think it's $5 million every time you tell something that's going on behind the scene, but there really isn't a whole lot going on behind the scenes. It's you're seeing everything, the stress and the strain and crying and everything else is all real.
Would you ever go back on if you had the opportunity?
They asked me a couple of years, 2-3 years later, and I just said, hell no. That's how brutal it is.
So I saw that you got kicked off or voted out after 31 days. So what was the bigger issue for you? Was it the mental perspective or the physical perspective?
Good question. Physical, because I hadn't really eaten in a month. You know, I was just, you could see my rib cage. You could count my vertebrae. I went on at 250 and I got out of there at about 218. Wow. Things like that. I mean, it was just, mentally it was okay, but you're so depleted. Your brain's not even working.
So what did you eat while you were there? Like, what were you able to actually eat?
We ate thousands of termites. You know, you're just like a gorilla. You break off a chunk of the termite nest and run a stick through your mouth and stick it in the hole and they're running all over it. You wrap your lips around it.
Mm.
They taste like peppers. It's the highest protein in the jungle.
All right. So you made it sound a little more appealing than what I originally thought. But,
you know, in that show, you'll see if you watch the show, they have the rewards of food. And so it might be chocolate cake or ribs or hamburgers or whatever. You haven't eaten, so your body's not ready for it. It's coming out of you as fast as it's going in. It's crazy. You cannot hold anything down.
I believe that. I mean, your body has adapted to this crazy environment. Then all of a sudden, you're like, for this one day, we're going to do something completely wild and different.
Yeah.
So where were you at for this series?
Nicaragua.
Nicaragua.
It was 2010. Redemption Island, season 22.
So does that mean like other castmates from the past come on? Why do they call it Redemption Island?
Yeah, three guys came from old shows, Boston Rob and a couple other guys.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So give us the name of the book there for everyone to hear. We want to make sure we get this out there.
It's Aggressively Human.
That's a sticking title. I like that. And can they find it everywhere? I'm sure Amazon's probably a good place to go.
Amazon's a great place for it. Go to Amazon, Aggressively Human. Yeah, it's doing really well. It's got 85 stars. It's a great message. It's a fun guys read. I think actually it's being sold in about 30,000 different sites. I did the Audible. Which was a lot of fun and stepping out in a different challenge that I'd never done.
So wait. You did your Audible?
I recorded the Audible. Yeah, I couldn't have somebody else tell my story. You know,
I appreciate that, but I didn't know how that worked. If they would just be like the publisher, whoever's like, no, you got to let this guy do it.
Yeah. It was just, we just signed with a little indie publisher and they don't do a lot of the marketing. It's I'm kind of a one man sales and marketing team right now.
Yeah, we've talked to authors before in the past, we've had one that was, he wrote a book with Dan Patrick, and you know that was a little different. And he's a writer for The Simpsons, so he had a little bit better push. Yeah. But most of the guys we talk about, like, there's these really good books out there, and it's just you peddling it, doing what you can. But you know, we'll we'll do what we can to help you out, brother. I mean, you know, we got our socials out there, and we'll make sure we put the links up there, because
a real easy place is just my website too, writeauthor.com.
Yeah, that's
there's a hot link to Amazon, and then I've got a lot of rotating pictures, all my blogs that I've been doing for the last year, tons of great photos.
So what does 2024 have in store for the most interesting man in the world?
Pumping the book hard. Get out there and get in the surf. My knee is feeling great. I'm going to be going to, I just got the Barnes & Noble in Santa Monica out here for the grand opening in the middle of June. Just going to a lot of book signings, just schlepping my book, a few short little trips. Probably this fall or something late, you know, going into winter, probably get a surf trip in somewhere, maybe back down to Fiji. Other than that, we love where we're living here. And I patented a toilet, kind of a wacky idea that I got when we traveled around the world for 9 months.
I need to hear about this patented toilet now.
Just American toilets, just toilets in general. You're sitting even. When we were in Indonesia and everybody squats there, and they squat and they go in a hole in the floor or something that's really lower. And that's why the squatty potties are so popular. It's shocking to feel the difference when you have your knee above your hips. It just opens up your colon and everything else. And it's kind of,
I believe that. This is the content we needed for the show, but it all makes sense to me, but I don't know how well that translates to the American culture.
Yeah. So I'm going to really start schlepping that to about 30 different big manufacturers, Toto, Standard, Night.
Do you got a name for it?
Yeah, but they'll do something else. I call it the courtesy 180. And so you you know when you walk into a bathroom in the public bathroom stinks, you say, what a courtesy flush.
Yep.
So this one, you spin around and you face the tank, and now the flusher's right there, your toilet paper's right there, you put your stuff on top of the tank. The ramps, the squatty potty is built up on the sides. They're ramps, so a long leg up to a short leg. The toilet seat, instead of being about 3.5 inches, it's about 4.5 inches. So there's a whole lot more room for big derrieres. It's also so kids won't fall in and they have to put another seat on it. There's handles up on the front of it to help an old person or a handicapped person. It's ADA compliant, so a wheelchair can roll up to it and they can slide right onto it. It always killed me watching people, you know, wheel up in a wheelchair and they're hanging onto it and they're wobbling all over, and it's just like, ugh.
I guess new meaning to the old shit handle, doesn't
it? It might. I try to convince people that you're supposed to sit on toilets backwards anyway, because that's what the tank's for. You can like put your magazine down and read, but why not? That's my patent. I just wanted to say, man, it's been a blast talking to you. I mean, just the stories are amazing. The book sounds fantastic, because just the conversations. I just got to decide if I want to do the Audible or actually read it, because you do a good job telling it. So don't let anybody tell you different. But, man, it's been a blast. We loved having you on the show today, man.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate it. You guys made it fun and easy and really enjoyable. I see the Raider helmet back there on the stand, too. Yeah. Nice job.
Greg is a big Raiders fan. We got like a signed Jeff Hostetler, you know, West Virginia connection. So we got Hostetler here. He's got the flag. He's got the helmet. Yeah, Greg's a big Raiders fan.
Beautiful. That's where my heart is. They're bringing us, you know, if you've always heard, once a Raider, always a Raider. They bring us back. The Cowboys have never brought me back once. The Indianapolis Colts just brought us all back, the 40th reunion guys. I was with them from Baltimore to Indy. So they brought all of us back, the whole team. But the Raiders bring all of us back. They fly us back. They put us up in a hotel for 3 nights, take care of all the food and drinks in the bars. Now they're bringing us back in the middle of June for a 3-day first-time wellness weekend. And they're going to have all kinds of doctors there checking from head to toe.
Oh, wow.
They don't have to do this.
I fully believe there's certain teams in sports that we need to do well. And I feel like the Raiders are one of those teams, because they have all that nostalgia. They have the camaraderie among the players. the former, the alum, and all that.
There's an identity with that franchise.
We're going on almost 25 years since the Raiders have been a good football team.
Yeah.
It's been some dark times, but my God, it's good for the league when they're doing well.
Well, and I'm impressed with everything you just said. Like, if you look at all the owners, Mark Davis is the next to last or the lowest as far as like net worth.
Yeah.
But yet here we are. We're not, it's not going to stop us from doing all this stuff.
Yeah. It's amazing, man, what he puts out. Yeah. It's just going to be expensive 3 days for him for, you know, just taking care of his boys.
Yeah. But hey, that helps. That helps with the product. Like if you're recruiting free agents and whatnot, see how you take care of the players that aren't even here now. Yeah. 100%.
Super classy.
Awesome. All right, brother. Well, hey, we'll let you go. Enjoy that SoCal weather while you got it. I don't know how it is there, but it's about 8 o'clock here on the East Coast, and it's 48 degrees. So,
man, Greg, pleasure, man. Nice to meet you both. Enjoy the time. Cheers.
Thank you. Hey, thank you so much, Steve. It's been a pleasure.